Coming up next on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville, it's Apropos of Something, co-hosted by Ellen Daniels and Nancy Lawrence. Apropos of Something welcomes experts, activists, and the marginalized from our community to discuss how the latest policies are affecting everyday people. Apropos of Something is brought to you by the Beckham team at Keller Williams. And now, here's Ellen.
Everybody, this is Apropos of Something. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville and resistance radio, I like to say. We air every Saturday morning from 10 to 11. We are co-hosted by me, Ellen Daniels, in our Charlottesville studio, and Nancy Lawrence from our studio in New York City. We seek out the most interesting people we can find with a passion for social justice, political activism, and the arts, and we guarantee every show will be apropos of something. Today, we've got hops and hip-hop. We are speaking with musician J-War of Vibe Riot and beer aficionado. He doesn't always like to call himself that, but I call him an expert, Lee Graves. J-War is back on the show to provide a deep dive into his band Vibe Riot's brand of funk, soul, hip-hop, reggae, rock, go-go, and we'll cover his spin on activism and performance. And Lee Graves is here, as I mentioned. He is an award-winning author of Virginia Beer, A Guide from Colonial Days to Craft's Golden Age. I'll say that again to make it smoother, just like the beers that we drink around here. Virginia Beer, A Guide from Colonial Days to Craft's Golden Age. We'll find out just what the craft is in craft beer, what's so special about the world of Virginia beer, and the unexpected role of women and slaves in domestic brewing history. We also hope to hear some quirky beer facts. This show should leave you wanting to tap your feet and visit a local tap. So, Nancy, are you there tapping?
I'm going to be as quirky as I can, I guess. I think I need to add, barkeep and DJ to your resume, my dear.
Oh, yes, well.
And perhaps you need to hydrate after all that. Yes, I'm here.
Yes,
I'm
chat here for a while and I'll hydrate.
10 days to go. I will change the subject. 10 days to go to the midterms.
I know. And, you know, that's what I wanted to mention. Did you know that in Virginia, you can vote today, and it's not so hard to be considered an early voter. You can go. I'm going to give you the facts about where you can go in a minute after I let you talk for a little bit.
Well, that's quirky of you. Well, all I was going to say was be aware. It just, you know, we have 50 states. Every one is its own thing. So, like the latest thing in Texas they've discovered, I'm sure that this is is even when you vote, they are now noticing that if you pay attention, sometimes the votes you cast are flipping, in this case, to Ted Cruz. Like one in 10 in these very populated, of course, Democratic areas. This is like it's another thing. It's not the gerrymandering that'll get you. It's not that they're moving the polling places and not telling you. Yes, it's all of that. Plus, I'm winding down, Ellen.
Make sure,
watch, since we're all voting mostly on computer screens these days, make sure you don't see anything fishy on the screen, because that's where you'll see it. I'm
glad you pointed out that there's something to do, because I just caught a little bit of that, and so at least you can check your screen. And if you do see something voting and something weird with voting in any state, you can call 866-OUR-VOTE. It's a voter protection hotline. There you go. And so let me just give the details about where you can vote today in Virginia.
Please.
If you're in Charlottesville City today, Saturday, you can the 27th from 8:30, which is past now, till 5 p.m., you can go downtown 7th Street. It's where City Hall is. Google it, 127th Street, and vote in person. You'll fill out a form. It does not take long. And vote. And also, if you're in Albemarle County from 9 to 5 today, you can go to their registrar. It's at 1600 5th Street Extension, Charlottesville, and you can vote there, too.
Well, that sounds very civilized.
Yeah. So,
And then you can go have a beer.
Yeah, and go have a beer. And then I know you wanted to talk about something interesting going on.
An event, is that? Yes, I do. Sunday, November 4th at 2 p.m., the Virginia Film Festival is showing the documentary Circles. It's hosted by someone that's been on our show from the Northeast Neighborhood Association of Harrisonburg, the very smart and passionate Steve Thomas, from he's the restorative justice coordinator there. He's they're hosting the film, and then afterwards they're having a discussion. It's at the Violet Crown Cinema, November 4th. That is my event.
Thanks. I know we called him Biko. He goes by the name Biko. He was a great guy. So thanks for mentioning it. So we have an excellent show today. Our first guest is J.Y.R. We welcome him back. We have a lot more to talk about. He is an activist, musician, producer, and frontman for Vibe Riot. The band performs funk, soul, hip-hop, reggae, rock, and go-go. He is intent on using his music to advance positive change. Welcome back to the show, J.Y.R.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so what have you been up to lately? You are looking really cool today, I must say. And he brought me coffee. Any man that brings me coffee is close to my heart.
Winning.
Yes, you are winning. What have you been up to?
Winning.
Well, we've got some new music that we've been working on for a while. And this is around the time of the year where it usually just works out to where gigs slow down a little bit. And so we're getting ready to get back in the studio. And we've got a big event coming up next week, so that'll probably be the last one until next year. And so we've got a live album we're working on. It's going to be a 5-track live EP. And then we've got another 5 set of new studio tracks. And so we got 10 really nice sounds coming out. Hopefully early next year they'll be ready to release.
Hey, J.Y.R., how did your band come to be? Because I know there's many of you, so how did that happen?
So the age of the internet. The short answer is I found some of them on Craigslist, and then friends of friends. I think I actually found some of the guys. I was taking some guitar lessons, and my teacher told me, "Hey, I know a drummer, I know a bass player," and just word of mouth like that. I guess I had been kind of hopping around. I was a solo artist, hopping around with some bands that I was friends with. And just that experience, this was a couple years back, that experience, I enjoyed it a lot, but got to the point where I really wanted my own band so I could kind of put my own sounds out there, as opposed to kind of just taking my lyrics and blending them with the sounds that these other really good bands were creating, but they weren't exactly my sound. And so
those 5 songs you mentioned, that is the next EP, are those written all by you?
Mostly. Some of the other singers I work with write as well. But a lot of it is written by me right now.
So, Lee was talking about, he actually listened to some of your music before coming in, and I will agree, you're a great musician, and there were jazz influences, and there's so much. How would you describe your music? I described it with all those words, funk, hip-hop, go-go, rock, go-go. How do you describe it?
So first, I don't want to take credit for the musicianship. The guys I work with are amazing. I try to stay in my own lane. I'm a writer. So I feel I'll take credit and say that I love lyrics. Lyrics are my thing. I've been doing that forever. I know what I like when I hear it. And these guys, they've got backgrounds that range from jazz, hip-hop, rock and roll, funk, reggae, a little bit of everything. We're a very diverse band. So we've got guys who their favorite music, is all over the place, just like mine has become, probably mostly because I'm working with these guys and listening to what they're listening to now. And so the sounds that I grew up with were mostly reggae and then hip hop. And so that's kind of like the basis, the core of maybe what influences me. And these guys bring in other elements from other genres, and it all sounds good to me. And we figure out, all right, the rhythm is probably going to be really close to hip-hop or reggae, like I said. But hip-hop is the genre that was always pulling in pieces of everything else from the very beginning. So, and a lot of reggae artists from the time that, I guess, the great reggae artists that I was listening to when I was young, they also kind of started the same way. They were imitating music from America and different places before, and that kind of influenced even before reggae became recognized and huge and great. And so I think all art, all of the best art does that. We're all blending things that are from our environment and kind of incorporating it into this new sound, you know?
Did any of you guys study music or have it in your backgrounds in some way?
So I'm probably the only one who didn't really study music until recently. More recently, taking, like I said, some guitar lessons here and there, learned a little bit of music theory, just enough to know that I don't know what I'm talking about. But the other guys are well-trained. Some of the guys I've worked with have grown up taking classical lessons. Some of them have toured major with other major bands. And so I'm probably the least educated in music theory. But again, it's one of those things where I hear the sound. Sometimes I'll say something that makes no sense. The guys will interpret what I'm saying and asking for and come up with something that sounds even better than what I thought I was asking for. And boom, we got a song, you know?
So you kind of riff off each other.
Yeah.
What is the most important music advice you've ever received?
I guess being open. Sometimes others will bring something to you that might not necessarily be exactly what you had in mind. But if you're open, then sometimes you can come up with something it's just as good or better than maybe what you as a producer intentionally or had, you know, what your intent was creatively. And then sometimes you also have to say, hey, this is what I want, you know, and can you help me get there? But I think the key is that you got to have a team who all have the same musical vision and or have some give and take. And that's the way it stays fun. You know, as long as the music is fun, that's probably the best advice. As long as the music is fun, it's going to sound good. I mean, unless you guys suck, you know, but.
Right.
Is it difficult for you guys to make time to rehearse?
Not usually. Most of us all want to rehearse because we all want to be better. I mean, you can't really be good at anything if the only time you do it is when it's the performance. And most of us want to be good at what we do. So it's not really, I mean, life gets in the way sometimes. And, you know, yeah, there's other responsibilities or things that come up and get in the way. But for the most part, I think that we get the minimum amount of practice that we'd like. And different times in the year, sometimes we can do more. Sometimes we get, you know, get to do less. But I would say it's not hard to find time to practice.
When you're performing, have you had any experiences that have sort of blown your mind or had anything really inspirational happen while you were doing that? Or what do you like about performing?
I'd say all the time. You write a song, you practice songs, and then especially the first time, the first couple of times you get on stage, or I won't even say the first time, every time you get on stage, it's usually a little bit different, you know? And so sometimes it can be totally different, whether it's because you had to pull in a session musician who kind of knows what's supposed to happen, but doesn't all the way, you know, remember every, you know, little articulation of the song, and he does something different. And sometimes that can be bad. Sometimes that could be good. But kind of playing off each other, you have a lot of things that just happen spontaneously just because everybody's just in the moment. We're locked in a groove, in a pocket. And it might not be the pocket that's on that album, but it's amazing. And then all of a sudden, the next times you perform that song, you're like, let's do it like we did that last time. And sometimes you can't even do that. You know, it's like it's very spontaneous when you're on stage performing with adrenaline and rushing and people interacting with you, as opposed to when you're in the studio. And that's actually sometimes that might be one of our biggest challenges, is that. And I think it's a good problem to have, that as good as I've been able to get certain things to sound on record and in the studio, it seems like we always sound better live. And trying to get the studio sound to sound more and more like we do live has been my kind of longstanding challenge, you know. And I guess it's important, because if you haven't been to a show, your experience of us is through that album. And so in my mind, if I always sound better at a show, I'm like, well, here's my album. But look, really, we sound better at the show. You know, the album's good. It's really good. But we sound even better if you come to the show. But, oh, you live on the other side of the country. So I guess you might not be coming to a show yet. You know what I mean? So that's the kind of a challenge there.
What because you have performed so many places, do you have a favorite place, or is there a place where you went thinking this is going to be too big, or this is going to be too small, or have been surprised at how great it was?
I've had all of those feelings. Right now, I guess in Charlottesville, my favorite place is probably Ix Art Park, just because it just has a very warm community, interactive feel, whether you're on the outside stage or whether you're on the indoor stage. It just, it can be big enough, especially if you're outside, to where you can have a massive amount of people in front of you, or it can be smaller and intimate on the indoor stage, but it always feels good. You've got art all around you, visual art all around you. It's a very eclectic looking place. And so we always feel at home there. And I mean, we love all the other venues in Charlottesville. Sprint Pavilion is fun. Jefferson Theater is fun. The Annie Room that closed down was a lot of fun. But Ix Art Park just has a feel that that I haven't felt anywhere else. You know, it's very unique, you know, and so...
Where did you grow up, and what are your influences there, or did that influence you, or did your family influence you at all?
So I was born in Brooklyn, in New York, but I'd say at a pretty early age moved to Virginia Beach. So between those two, that's kind of where, you know, I refer to both those two places when I say where I grew up. And the influence is that those were bigger cities, and so you've got a lot of different kinds of people flowing in and out. You've got a lot. Everything is valid. All cultures, all styles are valid. You know, things that we consider weird, you know, in smaller cities or in the more country areas, in the city, you see all of that plus more, you know. So people tend to be a little more accepting, a little more expressive and open-minded. As far as influences, it goes back to my dad's from Jamaica. So he was always playing reggae. And reggae and hip-hop are very similar in that I feel like it's coming from people who were historically oppressed. And so you get the voice of the people through those genres a lot. I mean, you get dance songs and fun songs just as much as any other genre. But one thing that I think was a huge impact on me was this is the music of resistance, the music of fighting for equality, music of... you know, trying to get people to unite. You know, you'll hear songs like Africa Unite, and then you hear me do a song where I'm saying, black people, what up? White people, what up? You know, it's like, it's a direct translation for me. You know, it's all about unity. Let's come together. You know, we're all divided right now. And because of that division, it's easier to oppress us. And I think now more than ever, you're seeing that it's not only just black people or foreigners, or everybody's kind of like suffering right now from this kind of blatant, idea of supremacy, you know, that's kind of just taken over a lot of facets of our government or institutions right now. And so this music was always about the resistance to that in some ways. And so that influence has definitely stayed with me, you know.
Yes, we're having a great discussion with J-War. He fronts the band Vibe Riot. We're going to talk more about his activism and his event coming up November 2nd. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. This is Apropos of Something. We air on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and we are on Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. We are speaking today with J-War of the band Vibe Riot, and a little bit later, very soon, we're going to talk with Lee Graves. He's the award-winning author of Virginia Beer, A Guide from Colonial Days to Craft's Golden Age. So, J-War, tell us about your activism. I know this is really a big piece for you, and we started talking about it before the break.
I feel like you know, with things and people feeling so, you know, feeling a lot of tension and a lot of divisiveness kind of being pushed upon us. I always feel like music and art was kind of the thing that could always connect people, you know. Especially personally for me, it was always sports and music. You know, that's how I kind of found my people. That's how I found my tribe. And I feel like the same is for a lot of people. Like, whatever, it might not necessarily be sports or art, but whatever your thing is, it might be beer making. Usually it's some kind of creation, something where you can create something out of nothing, so to speak, you know. And you're creating joy at the end of the day, you know, and something that moves you. And people kind of unite around whatever it is, you know, whatever that thing can be. There's a community of people who will feel that. And that kind of transcends that one particular art or that one particular sport, you know, when you think about it, as people are just creating a connective experience with each other. And I think nothing really does that more better than music and art. And so I really try to make it a point that when I'm putting my events together, I'm keeping in mind, you know, how do I connect across and how do I make sure everybody, all different types of people, all different types of backgrounds, race, culture, like how do I make sure everybody knows that this is for them and that they will all feel welcome here and that nobody's going to come here and feel uncomfortable. And that's part of what I try to do with my music and my art. And I think people have noticed that. Businesses have called on me to put together events for them, knowing that that's kind of the crowd that I'm going to bring, you know. And if that's the crowd they want to speak to, you know, like they've now reached out to me, and I've felt really honored and appreciate that. And it empowers me, or it motivates me to do that even more and figure out better ways to do that. And so, you know, everything I do, whether it's trying to teach myself how to be a better songwriter, teach myself how to be a better marketer, it's so that I can create this community that better represents what I think a healthy environment should look like. And that's diversity, diversity, diversity for me.
That is great to hear that you're being sought out that way for that reason.
Is there something that you're... Are you alluding to you're working on something coming up, a new series of events for diversity and creating like a place to go for those sorts of events?
So the place would be Vibe Fest. And right now Vibe Fest is tied to two physical locations, Ix Art Park and now the Jefferson Theater is kind of a becoming a part of that in our series of dance parties. But really, I want it to be everywhere where we decide to do these events. You know, like I want this to eventually become something that I do in other cities, you know, other states. But yeah, we have an event called the Werewolf Vibes next week, which is really a dance party. But we're going to feature the Vibe Riot Band for a short set, probably about an hour. And it's the same idea where I'm calling upon. There's a lot of people talking right now saying that, you know, we need something. We need more events that feel like genuinely about connecting people. You know, it's not all about just come here and spend all your money on beer or whatever it is, even though we like beer, you know, no offense. We love beer, but it's like.
Watch it now.
He said, watch it.
You gave him a shout out a few minutes ago. I think you're still square. All right.
Yeah, so it's like we want people to have a genuine experience, and while doing that, yeah, we'll share our beer and we'll share the things that bring us joy, you know, together. And so yeah, that's what Vibe Fest is for me. And it's also giving a platform to, like you guys do with the station, to those who don't always get to express and get their voices heard. So we do that by bringing in other artists. We're going to pull in certain groups from UVA actually will be featured at this dance party. We're still working out some of those details, but at every event that I do, we try to pull in people from the community in some way, somehow, whether it's in the background, or whether it's on stage. Like, we're always trying to get more and more people involved because we feel like there's a lot of talent and a lot of people here that feel ignored and feel like they don't have a place, you know? And so we give them platforms and we give them kind of a space to where you can either come and enjoy yourself or come in and be involved in some kind of way.
Well, I think the thing that beer and you have in common in reading a little bit about Lee Graves is, and the craft beer world, is the sense of community, I think, is really important in both of those worlds. And that is what you're talking about.
Right.
And any way that we can support you, come back again. I know I keep asking you to come back and we're not quite done yet, but I mean, I'm just kind of moved by your mission and who you are. And I think it's really fantastic.
Thank you.
So the Werewolf Vibes, the dance party, it's, I don't know if you said that, but I have, it's November 2nd, right?
Is yes, next Friday.
And so I'm just curious, did you come up with the idea and get Jefferson, the theater, involved, or did they look to you to create this sort of space, exactly as you said, for diversity and people to be a community together and et cetera? Please.
I sought them out for this one. We did an event, a dance party, a couple months back, where it was a very community-oriented event. We got a lot of the merchants downtown to get involved with us. They had, they helped us give away tickets and items and discounts for all their services as prizes for the winner of the dance party that we did at that item. I didn't have the band involved, so it was purely just my DJ and everybody who wanted to come out and have a good time. And it was amazing. It was my first time doing anything at a Jefferson Theater, and the place was packed. People had a great time, and people, just like after the Vibe Fest events with all the bands, everybody was coming to us saying, when is the next one? When is the next one? We can't just do this one or two times a year. When is the next one? When is the next one? You know, we don't have enough of these. And so I kind of felt like I wanted to keep the dance party theme going. And so I reached back out to the Jefferson, because I guess after the last one, they told me, hey, let's do this again soon, you know? And so I guess maybe that wasn't quite true. We kind of both had the idea that we wanted to do it again. And then once I had formulated my idea, how I wanted to market it and things like that, I reached back out to them and said, hey, you know, remember that thing we did last time? Let's do it again. This time I want to get my band involved and some other people involved.
It's a great title, you know, for the season. And even if it wasn't near Halloween, it's a great, a werewolf is great for so many reasons. Is that you, by the way, coming up with that?
Yes, thank you.
That is amazing. Yeah,
I beat my head against the wall.
I'm glad I brought it up. I was wondering.
I beat my head against the wall, hoping I can come up with a gem. And so hearing you say that makes me feel validated. Thank you so much.
Totally. Okay. So we did. Yes, I did not know that. So once again, the lyricist. I was wondering if of all of these events, or not even the events, your concerts as well, what's your family's reaction? Has it been the same? How are they? How what do you hear from them?
So my family has always been supportive. I think, you know, there was a time when, you know, I wanted to take a break from school and pursue music full time. You know, there was a opportunity that somebody was offering me in a group I was involved with in the past. And that's maybe the one time my family said, no. It said, you know, you do school, you finish school, and you can do whatever you want. We're behind you, but we're not behind you cutting that short for the music. And, you know, so I followed through with that. You know, I got my degree. And ever since then, they've been some of my biggest fans. I'll release music and, you know, I'll send it to my family and I'll go home and my dad's bought it off of Amazon, you know? And so, so it's been cool, especially, you know, that too, being that I feel like my dad is a big part of the reason that I'm doing the kind of music that I'm doing. To hear him, you know, go from playing his music, his reggae, and all of a sudden we're eating dinner and my album's playing, you know, it's kind of like a good feeling, you know, to feel like I look up to my dad a lot. And so, you know, and then my cousins and everybody everybody has been very supportive. I have family up in Maryland who come down for our parties sometimes, and, you know, D.C. as well. My immediate and extended family will come and show up for events, and they're not very close physically, so that always, you know, I always appreciate that a lot. They've been very supportive.
Well, thank you for coming back, J-War, and we want to just give another shout-out to the Werewolf Vibes concert, November 2, and that, what time does it start?
It's going to start at 8. The DJ is going to start spinning around 8, and he's amazing. People who have went to the first event loved him, and he's going to do his thing from 8 to 9, and the band is going to go on for about an hour, and then he'll close out the night.
Great, great. So that's at the Jefferson?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see you there. I'm going to try to go.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks again so much.
Thank you guys so much.
VibeRiot.com, right, for those of us farther from the Virginia area. Is that right? Is that
yes.
VibeRiot.com?
Okay. VibeRiot.com. And if you're on Instagram, look us up, VibeRiot or VibeFest Seaville. Instagram is where we put out a lot of our stuff, you know, the website and on Instagram. So look us up.
Great. Are you going to stick around so I can take your picture?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Of course.
All right.
Thank y'all so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by again on a Saturday.
Yes. It's a pleasure.
Very lucky that way.
Yes.
I feel lucky.
What a great guy. Nancy, you have a news of note?
I do. It's based in things that aren't so new anymore. There are still 245 kids that are not united with their families. This is 13 weeks past that court-ordered deadline. And there are parents of 175 of those kids who have been deported, which I know all of this is old, but it is still new. And the other new thing about all this is that reporters are finding that these deported parents' efforts to get their kids back, they're not, some of them are finding that, again, each state has their own rules, and some state court judges are granting custody to migrant children, giving them to American families permanently, because there, as I've been reading, there are apparently, you know, holes in the legal system. They don't even notify the parents. And then the last part of all this is that Department of Homeland Security is making it harder for immigrants to come to the United States or stay in the United States if they or their family need public benefits like Medicaid, public housing, or food stamps. They block their visas and their green cards. They make them ineligible. They just want people with money in their wallets. That is all.
Okay. Well, for me, something as an anecdote to that, I'm going to mention it again. Vote. And vote early. You can do it if you meet just a few one single criteria. It's very easy to do. Let me just say, you can do it. Vote early. Vote whenever. At Charlottesville, it's down by City Hall. Just Google the registrar for there in Albemarle County. You can vote today again on Fifth Street Extended. And I wanted to say that there was an article in the New York Times that featured Charlottesville in a very negative light once again. Wanted to bring that to attention. ProPublica and the New York Times did a piece featuring the student Zianna Bryant, who brought the controversy to light about, or brought the statue to light, really, here in Charlottesville. She's a very young student activist who I had the pleasure to meet once, but she's amazing. And so the New York Times pointed out the achievement gap between white students and black students. And I have to say, because of Lara Harrison, who was here, I was motivated to go to the school board meeting this Thursday. And it's really astounding what goes on at those meetings and who is in control. But I have to say, it seems like they're making some progress, and I know it has to do with Lara's work and the people that have been showing up at the school board meetings in terms of getting anti-racist imagery out of Albemarle County. And Charlottesville City Schools has been really important, I think. My take on it is that they've been vocal, and they're much more progressive and just, frankly, up-to-date on their regulations and rules about that kind of thing. And I think that has influenced the Albemarle School Board. So that was a really long take on just some of the things that have been happening here locally.
It'll be curious as always, not as always, but as ever, I guess, to see what happens on the 6th of November. If all those votes are counted correctly, that is. Anyway,
yes.
That's great you went, Ellen. I'm glad you're seeing
I know. It's just, it was good to see. So with no further ado, let's introduce our next guest, shall we? I'm getting my notes ready. He is. We are really excited to have him here today. He's the award-winning author of Virginia Beer, A Guide from Colonial Days to Craft's Golden Age. We're going to find out what is so special about the world of Virginia beer. As I mentioned, the role of women and slaves in beer's history here. We're going to hear about exciting trends, what he thinks is going to be happening in the next couple of years, and some beer recommendations, I'm hoping, for the seasoned and the squeamish, and some quirky beer facts, like what is a white whale. So he also, this is Lee Graves, he also hosts the RVA Beer Show. That is on the Richmond station, WRIR. This guy is the guy to be with if you want to talk or drink beer, and we can only do one of those things right now, but we are very happy he is here. Welcome to the show, Lee.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you guys.
Yeah.
So apparently we're drinking beer.
I wish we were.
Did I say we were drinking? So your book is really a deep dive into Virginia's beer, from the first kegs in the Jamestown colony to what is now, I think, hundreds of breweries in Virginia alone.
Right. The settlers who came to Jamestown had beer on the boat with them.
Wow. Okay. So, you know, what is easy for a person to me who's a layperson, I would say, who's been around for longer than just 20 years, like some millennials, is that things have really, really changed in the beer world. So, like, back in the 80s, and I read this on Thrillist.com, this is the way they put it. There were five kinds of beer in the 80s. Yellow, fizzy, cheap, widely available in lagers, and people did not care that they tasted like metal and corn. So what has happened? We're going to leave this question hanging, and we're going to go to a hard break. But the question I'm going to pose is, what has happened since then to create this boom in beer creativity and brewery popularity over time? So we will be right back with Lee Graves. Don't go away. We are back. Welcome to Apropos of Something. We air every Saturday morning from 10 to 11, co-hosted by me, Ellen Daniels, here with you now, and Nancy Lawrence, my good friend in New York City. So we are back here with Lee Graves, and I was asking you, what has happened to cause this boom in the beer industry in the last 40 or 6 years? I mean, it keeps changing. What's been going on?
Well, part of that is just kind of a return to traditional things about beer. As many beer geeks know, there are four traditional ingredients in beer: hops, barley, water, and yeast. And for many years, those were kind of neglected, and there were different ingredients going into beer. But actually, if you trace it back into the late 70s, early 80s, et cetera, there was a boom in home brewing that was generated by a lot of young folks going overseas, tasting the flavorful ales of England and the wonderful lagers in Germany. And they came back and said, well, gosh, we can't get these over here. So they started making their own beer, and friends were saying, hey, you ought to start a brewery. And back in those days, there was a boom of what we called microbreweries back then. And there was kind of an early wave that went through, and that ebbed a little bit, but it picked back up again around the turn of the century. And now there are more breweries in Virginia, around 300 breweries in Virginia, and more in the United States, about 6,633, I think, is the latest number. Mm-hmm. So it really is a golden age.
Since you're mentioning in your book it's colonial, so did Thomas Jefferson have, among as many things, was he also making beer, probably?
Oh, yeah. People kind of generally associate Jefferson with wine because he was a wine connoisseur. He loved wine, but of all the founding fathers, he was the beer guy. George Washington loved beer, Patrick Henry loved beer, Ben Franklin loved beer, but Jefferson actually grew hops at Monticello. He had a malting house built. He designed a brew house. And he also had one of his slaves, Peter Hemmings, who was the brother of Sally Hemmings. Most people have heard of Sally Hemmings. But Peter was trained by a professional brewer who had come over from London. And I advocate that he was the first African-American in the United States who was actually professionally trained as a brewer. And he used very sophisticated techniques. But women also were a seminal part of the scene because most of the domestic brewing was supervised by the women who were running the homestead. And they would say, we need to brew some more beer, because it was a staple at that time. People did not trust the water, so they turned to beer, which was nutritious because of the beverages, of the grains in there. And so the women were the ones who were actually supervising the brewing on the plantations, on the homesteads.
Were the slaves working plantations and breweries, or was that all, regimented as well, how they were working?
Well, as I said, the women supervised it, and they, said, we need to brew some beer, but it was the slaves who were actually in the kitchens doing the hands-on brewing. And in addition, one of the cool things about Virginia is that it was a great hops-producing state, and hops are one of those four ingredients in beer. It gives beer its bitterness along with flavor and aroma. But one of the really cool things is, as I mentioned, Jefferson grew hops at Monticello, but slaves actually were growing hops on their own in their own gardens and selling them for a profit. We have records at Monticello and Mount Vernon. There was a brewery at William and Mary and other places around Virginia in colonial times. And Virginia was actually a top hops producing state up until the Civil War. So, that's a whole level of involvement that I think a lot of people aren't aware of.
What happened in 2012?
2012, there was a bill. Most people in the beer community refer to it as Senate Bill 604. It really was the game changer in Virginia. Before that time, if you were a brewer and you wanted to sell your beer retail on site, you also had to sell food. So basically, you had to be a restaurant or a brew pub. The law was changed in 2012 to eliminate that requirement, so you didn't have to be a restaurant. You could be a brewer. You could have people in your tap room that could come taste the beer there. You could sell pints, sell growlers and crowlers, etc. And it has really created what I like to call a cultural shift in the way we consume beer, with people being allowed to, bring their pets, kids, families, of course, and friends. And one of the really cool parts of it, I think, and it's going to have long-term effects, is that children can see adults consuming beer responsibly. People usually go to a tap room not to, get a buzz and get fall down drunk. They want to have a couple beers, talk with their friends, and kids are running around there, and they can see it, and it kind of demystifies that alcohol consumption part of our culture.
I know you always hear about, in Europe, how people drink beer, and
exactly,
the kids might drink beer, and how it just is not a big thing there, and it's not a taboo.
It's very much a European model that's going on now, and I just think it's great.
So what is the definition of craft beer? Speaking of what's going on.
Well, it actually has a very technical definition that the Brewers Association, which is the overarching organization that represents small and independent brewers in the United States, it has three tiers of definition. Really, I won't go into the details of it, but it it limits the volume of beer you can produce to 6 million barrels a year. Largely, though, the craft label is for small and independent brewers. And we're talking about the neighborhood community ones. And places, here in Charlottesville, we think of Three Notched and Reason Beer and Random Row and Star Hill out in Crozet. And they're very dedicated. They're very passionate people to producing excellent beer. And as we were talking about earlier, just really kind of sustaining that community, that culture, that conviviality that is associated with beer.
So way back a few years ago, how did Charlottesville or any other city in Virginia deal with Prohibition?
Well, a lot of breweries closed. In Charlottesville, it's very interesting. There are records of home brewing going through a spike during Prohibition. One of the professors at UVA wrote down in his journal about coming up with any number of home brewing, and he recorded how flavorful they were, et cetera. But the breweries around the state just simply had to close, by and large. Some of them shifted to soda and bottled water. There was a brewery in Richmond, Home Brewing Company, that made it through Prohibition and was able to get back running after Prohibition and survive until 1969. But, yeah, Prohibition was a big whack to the head of beer lovers everywhere.
So I want to ask you, for three answers, and here's Uh-oh. The three things. Okay, a beer you're loving right now, a beer for someone who says they really don't like beer, and then third, if you saw this beer somewhere on tap, it might be rare, a beer that you would just have to order because you don't see it very much, but you might be likely to see it.
I don't know if I can remember all three parts.
One is a beer. I'll review.
No, that's
Luckily,
fine.
Luckily, I have notes. A beer. We'll go one at a time. A beer you're loving right now.
Well, there's a style that. Well, first of all, I'm kind of a hop head. I like hoppy stuff. Although, kind of my problem is I like it all. But there's a style that really has emerged lately. It was initially called New England IPAs, and now it's kind of referred to generally as hazy, juicy IPAs. And the bitterness quality from the hops is really kind of dialed down in that, and we're seeing a lot of breweries really establishing that style. In fact, at the Great American Beer Festival in September, they had that category as one of the judging categories for the first time, and it actually was the most entered category of all. So that's what I'm getting into now. The second part is what
so yeah. For someone who says, a lot of people say, I really don't like beer, but you know, like here there's a place called, I think it's Draft House or
Tap House down the mall. Yeah.
So,
Draft Tap House.
Right. Not to be confused with the movie theater called Draft Alamo, whatever it's called. So that place was so cool because you could just, and I think this is a trend, you could just pour like a tiny bit of beer and whatever, and there's like 60 or so beers you can try. And I discovered the Radler, this grapefruit Radler, which is fantastic. So if for someone who doesn't like beer, what would you say they might try?
I love that challenge. And, you know, I hear that frequently from folks. They say, oh, I really don't like beer. And it's like, oh, well, you know, have you tried this and have you tried that? There are several styles that have gotten a lot of traction. Brewers, we call them gateway beers, which is for people to try out. And some of the lagers and the pilsners, the Kolsch's, Saisons, those are low alcohol, usually very light in color, and they're not super demanding on the palate. So they're a great way to try different things. And most of the breweries, in fact, all the craft breweries that I know of, if you go in and you know you are with friends and they love beer and you're not liking beer particularly, a brewery will pour you a sample of something and they'll say, here, try this. And so you can explore different things without having to buy a whole pint or get something in your mouth that you don't like. So
that's a good point. Like, don't be shy to ask someone to
exactly,
taste.
Exactly.
Let's skip the other one for next time.
Oh, come on.
Well,
there's some wonderfully rare beers out there. That's for sure.
Have you, Lee, have you homebrewed any beers of your own, I guess, or bottled any? How close have you gotten to the real thing yourself?
Oh, I was very active in homebrewing for a long time. I started back up a year and a half ago and kind of let it slide with the book. There were so many demands with writing that I had just let it slide for a little bit, but I'm very eager to pick it back up. But homebrewing is probably the best way to learn about beer in terms of how do you make it? What are the ingredients? How do they go together? And it really combines that science aspect of it where you have to pay attention to temperatures and times and fermentation, et cetera, and the artistic side of it where you can say, oh, gosh, you know, how would it taste if I use this hop instead of the other hop or, you know, a different barley, et cetera. So, yeah, I cannot encourage people strongly enough to homebrew if you're interested in beer at all. It's just a great way to learn and it's just a fun way to share beer too. I had, you know, just a blast sharing beers with other home brewers and saying, oh man, this is great. So, yes.
Where did this passion come from, by the way?
Oh, well,
there,
that has a lot of different, do you mean my passion? Well, my passion,
yes.
Actually, I'm kind of like every other guy who grew up and went into college and said, oh man, I'm going to drink, you know, this is where I can drink lots of beer, et cetera. And, you know, like every other college student at the time, I was, you know, spending as little as I could for a six pack of beer that would just get me buzzed up. So, but my best friend is Scottish. He was born in Scotland, and he would come back from the UK with these really awesome British beers like Belhaven, McEwan's, and some of the others. And that's where I really kind of thought, wow, there's a whole side of this that I really wasn't familiar with. So, and I've been to Scotland, UK, been to Germany and tasted those beers. But I really didn't know how much I didn't know about beer until I started writing about it in 1996. And part of the things I love about it is that you can continue to learn. And it's just a really wonderful way to exercise your curiosity, you know, as far as history goes, as far as the brewing aspect goes, and as far as the industry goes, et cetera. And I just keep finding new things that are exciting to learn.
So speaking of that, what trend do you foresee? There's so many trends with beers, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Well, a couple of things I see. The trends in beer styles. Right now, the IPAs are dominating the market. They're the most popular style in the nation. And those are your bitter beers. IPA stands for India Pale Ale, and it's a beer that was originally brewed by the English to be shipped to India. So it was a strong beer, and it matured during the voyages there. I've seen that taper off slightly, and there are breweries that are concentrating more on the accessible lagers and pilsners, some of your lighter beers that are more accessible to a larger number of people. In terms of the industry, what is happening now is that the small and independent, the very small producers of beer are the ones who are really contributing to the growth in breweries. So I don't think you will see any breweries kind of enter the market and say, oh, we're going to be national. We want to go national, or even on a regional level. It's just so competitive now. There are so many beers in the grocery stores, et cetera. And people are discovering that these tap rooms are community centers as well. They, you know, you go for bingo night, you go for running club, you go for trivia night, et cetera. You go for great music. And so maybe we could get Vibe Riot, you know, to a brewery. So that is what I see. I see those small community-centered brewers being the ones that really successfully continue to have great beer and be part of the community.
Well, I was just wondering before you go, where is the farthest place you've been to try a craft beer?
Oh, goodness. I've been to Oberammergau in Germany, and I've been to the farthest reaches of Scotland, too. So I've not been to Belgium, and that's on the bucket list. So,
yeah. There you go.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Lee Graves.
No, it's been a pleasure, really.
Yes, us too. Really fun to talk about beer. And you can catch him on his own show, WRIR.
Right, RVA Beer Show, every other Friday at 11:30 with my co-host, Jay Burnham.
And check out the book. It's really, really great. It's a great book called Virginia Beer, A Guide from the Colonial Days to Craft's Golden Age.
And please read responsibly.
Yeah, exactly. Read while you're having a beer.
Yes, Nancy. So thank you. And stick around just for a little bit. Okay, cool. So Nancy, this is time for... Stick around just for a little bit for a picture.
Your wallet-sized picture order. Okay.
What is it time for? The palate cleanser. Do you have
digging
one?
Digging it. Yes, I do.
Sorry,
I'm getting walked off already.
I like the music.
The Palm Springs Art Museum, obviously in California, they're having their annual Artist Council juried exhibition right now. It started last Saturday. It's their 49th. They had 400 works submitted. They chose 50, and among the 50 pieces is one from my once upon a time graphic design professor, Ken Carls. He is in this exhibit.
Yeah.
Truly one of those, yes, the standout teacher when you get that question. Anyway, when I was in school, and even though he can't grade me on this mention, thankfully, his work is called Sweet Tooth. I hope we have a California Palm Springs listener or two. It'll be there through December 9th. And he was in there 2 years ago. He won an award of excellence for his last exhibit. Anyway, the reception is tonight for all of our Palm Springs listeners.
Oh, yeah.
There could be beer there. I'm sure there will be beer there, and it'll be free. Okay,
well,
what do you got?
My palate cleanser also has to do with food. Did you know that how you eat, what you eat in, where you eat, what you're listening to will affect the food's taste, your perception of the food's taste? So there was a study loosely called the Sonic Chip, where volunteers ate Pringles and the crunching sound was recorded. So the louder the sound was, they thought the fresher was the chips. The volunteer thought that the chips were really fresh. And the psychologist wrote a book called Gastrophysics. And one of his findings was that tastes are also associated with specific colors. So hot chocolate tastes more intense when sipped from an orange cup compared to a white one, if you can believe it. And also, what I also like, tasting with a heavier spoon, thought that the food was better than if they ate with a lighter spoon. And here's one for you, Nancy, speaking of graphic design. In a study called The Taste of Typeface, sweet tends to be associated with round typefaces and forms, angular typefaces associated with sour, salt, and salty and bitter. So if you're doing food packaging, that is key.
Wow. My mind has been blown. I'm going back to school. I'm doing it all over again. Thank you.
So as we go out, I wanted to say next week, Hawes Spencer on his new book, The Summer of Hate, Indivisible's Ken Horn on the election. Our music is by Springtide. And remember, no one has to do everything, but everyone has to do something. And thank you so much, Nance, for being with us.
Agreed.
As always. And Lee Graves and Jaywar. Thank you so much.